Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 19, 2020. Illinois impact. 140 deaths, including 3 area residents. 69 COVID-19 patients at Carl and Urbana. Region 6 rate at 14%. Among the now 11,014 lives lost statewide to COVID-19, a Champaign County woman in her 100s, a Vermilion County man in his 60s, and a Douglas County resident in their 80s, all reported Wednesday by local officials. On the day the state announced 140 new fatalities, Health Director Dr. Nogi Ezike pointed out, for those who believe only the elderly die from the virus, 2 of them were in their 30s, 3 were in their 40s, 9 were in their 50s. 6 of the 69 COVID-19 patients at Carle Foundation Hospital are in intensive care, according to data updated Wednesday. In all, 96 COVID-19 patients are hospitalized in Carle facilities, with 21 in Bloomington, 3 in ICU. On the eve of stricter mitigation measures taking effect statewide, Region 6's 7-day positivity rate remains 14%. Of 21 counties in the region, Effingham had the highest rate, 25.9%, Moultrie the lowest, 9%. With 225 new positive tests reported Wednesday in Champaign County, the number of recovered cases stands at 7,709, up by 144 overnight, with active cases at 1,589, up to 80. And there's a headline from the University of Illinois, Failure Not an Option Under New Plan. The University of Illinois is planning to allow students who fail a course this semester to receive a no-record COVID designation that doesn't affect their GPA. Students would also have until the end of exams to drop a class. The Academic Senate will meet Friday to consider the proposal, which has received the unanimous support of the Education Policy and Senate Executive Committees. The goal of the proposal is to address some of the concerns that we've been hearing from students recently about mental health and anxiety around grading and ad drop deadlines, Executive Committee Chairman Rob Carr said. Under the proposal, students would get an F in a course who get an F in a course would automatically have that turned into an NX on their transcript for no record COVID. The student wouldn't earn credit for the course, so it would have to be retaken to receive credit. Students who receive a D-, D, or D-plus would also have the option of converting that into a no-record COVID designation. Students started a petition to let them choose between earning a letter grade and receiving a credit or no credit, as was done in the spring. While that's not being proposed, student senators said Wednesday that they support the later drop deadline and the removal to no Fs. And the move to no Fs. A lot of students are struggling, Student Senator Dana Yoon said. I think it's critical that we support our students in this way. This is a good step in hearing our students. Kevin Pitt, Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education, said under the proposal, courses that are dropped by the last day of finals, December 18th, would not appear on the transcript. The course literally disappears, he said, just like it would have been before the regular drop deadline. Senators were hoping to pass a proposal by the end of the week so students would have clarity going into Thanksgiving week. This is a huge source of stress for our students, said Brian Brower, chair of the Council of Academic Professionals. The faster we can dispose of this matter, the more it's going to benefit their ability to actually have a break over break. Apologetic teen sentenced to 19 years in holdup trial that still haunts victims a year later. A Champaign teen who called his own behavior during a bank robbery a year ago barbaric, drastic, and outlandish was sentenced Wednesday to 19 years in prison. I regret this is part of my legacy. I never grew up saying that I would be a criminal. If I could take everyone's pain and make it mine, I would, Dakir Pickens said moments before being handed a sentence that means he must serve at least 16 years behind bars. Two women who were in Regions Bank when Pickens brutally pistol-whipped one of them and fired six shots in an attempt to get cash wept in the back of the courtroom as Judge Randy Rosenbaum determined the young man's future. Pickens, 19, pleaded guilty in late September to armed violence, admitting that on October 15, 2019, he used a handgun to try to take money from an employee of the bank at 111 South State Street, Champaign. In return, Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lazar dismissed other charges of armed violence, financial institution robbery, and aggravated battery with a gun. Lazar then argued that Pickens should be sentenced to 23 years in prison, offering him a discount of 7 years on the maximum sentence for Pickens' cooperation with police and prosecutors. The conviction was the first for the teen, who said he was homeless, addicted to drugs, and under the influence when he went in the bank late that morning, accompanied by his younger brother, Dasheem Pickens, 17, has been deemed unfit to stand trial. On Tuesday, Rosenbaum heard evidence from Champaign Police Detective Jody Cherry about the logistics of the attempted holdup, from a doctor treating one of the victims, two bank employees, and two former alternative school teachers of Pickens. Given the late hour that concluded, Rosenbaum decided to hear from the lawyers and Pickens Wednesday, then sentence the teen who had no criminal record. He came out of the gate screaming with one of the worst offenses possible. He comes into a bank to take money, and he hurt somebody, the judge said. Cherry testified that just prior to the 11:30 a.m. report of the holdup, there was a call to 911 that shots had been fired on the west side of town more than 2 miles away. Cherry later learned that the call had been made on Dakir Pickens' phone by a third young man who was never charged with the crime as a ruse to divert police resources from the bank. Using surveillance video, Cherry explained to the judge how Dakir Pickens took the lead and fired a shot into the ceiling. He then grabbed a female employee by the hair, threw her to the floor, and hit her in the head with a pistol as he demanded to be let into the secure teller area. The branch manager had run out a back door with Dasheem Pickens chasing him, Cherry said. When the manager got away, Dasheem came back inside and watched as Dakir fired shots into a door and at bulletproof glass around the teller area. Dakir also kicked at the protective barrier in an unsuccessful attempt to get in. Cherry said six shots in all were fired. None of the four employees was hit by gunfire. The brothers ran from the bank without cash, changed clothes in a nearby alley, ditched the gun in a pile of clothing, and split up. Each was caught not long after, and the clothing and gun collected as evidence. The assistant branch manager, who had been pistol-whipped, told the judge that Pickens hit her repeatedly and that she was too stunned to react to his demands as she bled from her head wound. A 10-year employee of various banks, the 31-year-old woman, said she had been the victim of 12 previous robberies and never once before had she been physically attacked. The other robberies, she said, either made their demands quietly or with a note. I would give them the cash and press a button. Although Lazar sought less than the maximum sentence for Pickens, he had to persuade the judge with evidence that the woman had suffered great bodily harm, so the Pickens had to serve 85% of his sentence. The woman's workers' compensation doctor, Dr. James DeSalvio, testified at length about the treatment she continues to receive for the aftermath of a concussion and trauma. She still has debilitating headaches, nausea, ringing in her ear, neck and back pain, loss of balance, and severe anxiety. This has profoundly affected her life, her day-to-day existence, DeSalvio said. Defense attorney Matt Hamm asked DeSalvio about the length and depth of the wound to her head, but the doctor said the 2-centimeter cut was the most menial part of the injury compared to the pain she has suffered since. Rosenbaum said he was convinced by what he heard that the woman had indeed suffered great bodily harm, which has to be determined on a case-by-case basis. Lazar called what Pickens did to the woman an unnecessary level of violence. He doesn't enter as a timid 18-year-old. He enters as a threatening adult male with a firearm and grabs the victim. You can see her smiling, going into the break room. She has no idea her life is about to be completely changed and maybe permanently changed, Lazar said. The crime left that woman out of work and her co-worker who remains on the job fearful, he said. Ham argued for a 15-year sentence, noting that Pickens was barely over 18 when the crime was committed and that his brain has not fully developed. He urged the judge not to find that the woman's injury amounted to great bodily harm. She has 1 2-centimeter cut to her head, not multiple lacerations from multiple hits, Ham argued. He reminded the judge of testimony from 2 employees of the Reddy School who knew Pickens from the 2016-17 school year. Excuse me. The school social worker called Pickens polite, interested in art and history, and able to do his work when he showed up. However, he was absent 40% of the year, tardy another 20%, present only 40%, then dropped at the end of 9th grade. Another teacher called him kind, gentle, and helpful to other students. Ham also asked the judge to consider that Pickens was homeless and had substance abuse issues. When it was his turn to speak, Pickens told the judge that his father is a crack addict, his mother an alcoholic, his brother is schizophrenic, his grandmother was murdered by an uncle, and his entire immediate family lives in poverty. I have to live with that, he said. He had no family members present for his sentencing. I don't know how to fill out a job application. I know how much a gram of cocaine costs, he said. The state said I'm responsible for a cold, calculated crime. I'm 19. I made a mistake. And there's a picture of Savoy Village clerk Billie Jean Kruger on the front page, and with this article joining it. Longtime village clerk checking out. Kruger feels peace with decision to retire. A year after Billy Kruger first came to work for Savoy, it was a village of 2,674 residents. Many new subdivisions, and 3 decades later, Kruger, Savoy's longtime village clerk, has seen the population grow to over 8,000. She's loved her job, she said, but at 72, she's decided to retire at the end of the year. Kruger was set to announce her retirement plans to the village board Wednesday night. Her retirement plans don't include moving. We love Savoy and we love living here, Kruger said. Kruger said she spent her life in Champaign and Savoy. She was originally hired in 1989 to be village clerk, but since she wasn't living in Savoy at the time, she was made deputy clerk instead, she recalled. Kruger, who later moved to Savoy, served as deputy clerk from 1989 to 2000 and has been village clerk ever since. During her tenure, Kruger said she worked with 2 village presidents and 5 village administrators, and village government has since relocated to the Robert C. McClary Municipal Center at 611 North Dunlap Avenue. As a village clerk, Kruger has been the official record keeper and election official for the village. She takes minutes at public meetings, prepares agendas, ordinances, and resolutions, and handles election filings for village offices. She's seen Savoy add both new businesses and subdivisions. We're growing so fast, she said. She'll be sad to leave her job, she said, but there are more things she wants to do with her time, including being able to use the Savoy Recreation Center she never has time to get to. People always told me, you know, when it's time to retire, and I did, she said. I just had a piece about it. The mother of 2, grandmother to 2, and married to her husband Larry for 47 years, Kruger said she hopes to travel more, help out with her grandkids' remote learning as needed, do some volunteer work, be active, and enjoy her home. Savoy Village President Joan Dykstra, who plans to retire herself next May after 3 decades of public service, said she's worked with Kruger since the 1980s and it's been a privilege. The village will lose decades of institutional knowledge when Kruger retires, Dykstra said. She's been a rock during COVID, during many staffing changes, especially recently, and she's kept me on track and kept me going, she said. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Area Service Clubs doing good things. Order deadline for CU Sunrise Rotary's annual Florida Fruit Sale is Friday. Purchases can be made online, links at newsgazette.com, and include contactless delivery in early December. This year, proceeds go to Developmental Services Center, which could use a break after 2 of its signature fundraisers, CU Oktoberfest and CU in the Caribbean, were done in by the pandemic. The fruit sale is the marquee fundraiser for a club that has raised more than $200,000 in its 33 years of doing community good. The Georgetown Ladies Community Club's first Mrs. Claus workshop has been an overwhelming success. The idea for community members to adopt students in the Georgetown Ridge Farm School District and provide them with coats and blankets in time for Christmas. The donations began arriving in droves on day one. The needs of more than 100 children met in what likely will become an annual project. If you'd like to help with GICC's 20 members, visit their Facebook page. This is a sidebar to the earlier article, Victim, I Don't Feel 100% Safe. Women recount trauma from violent holdup. A year after two young men tried unsuccessfully to rob a downtown Champaign bank, one woman cannot work and another is scared to go to work. Two women who were working in Regions Bank on October 15, 2019, when Dakir Pickens and his younger brother launched their violent attack, told a judge Tuesday their lives will be forever changed. At their request, the News Gazette is withholding their names. Both gave emotional testimony about how the armed robbery affected them. The assistant manager told the judge she has worked in the banking industry for 10 years and has been the victim of 12 previous bank robberies. The 31-year-old single mother of two young boys was working on her master's degree in banking at the time of the attack, planning to advance her career. Pistol whipped on the head by Dakir Pickens, she still suffers from crippling migraines, other pain in her body, insomnia, and severe anxiety that has left her unable to work since the attack. The woman was about to eat her lunch and was holding a spoon when the brothers rushed in. Dakir Pickens grabbed her by her long hair and threw her to the floor, yelling, "Where is the money?" expletive. "He hit me on the head multiple times," she said, adding her hands were severely bruised from trying to deflect the blows with the gun. She got a cut on the head that bled profusely, soaking her hair and clothing. It required four staples to close. Pickens demanded the money and access to the teller area. She didn't comply. "I was crying because I was physically hurt and in shock. I didn't tell him no. I was kind of curled into a fetal position and had my hands above my head. I was holding on to the white plastic spoon for dear life for some reason. To this day, I can't look at a spoon," she said. Meantime, her co-worker was in the teller area counting $50 bills when she heard a gunshot. "I shoved myself and the other teller down. I could hear the struggle between them and the assistant manager. They were saying, 'Give me the money,'" expletive. And she recounted, added that her co-worker said nothing in response. There were more gunshots aimed at the bulletproof glass above her head and that of the other teller. The glass did not give. She was able to crawl to her phone and dial 911. On the job about 6 months at the same time, that woman said she and the branch manager are still working at the bank. "My day-to-day life has changed," she said. "I'm constantly on edge, nervous. I lash out at my husband, and I constantly feel guilty because I feel like I should have been in the place of the co-worker who was pistol-whipped. I don't go places by myself. Even today, I don't feel 100% safe in my work, the place where I should feel safe," she said. The other teller quit because of the robbery, she said, and the injured assistant manager said she was let go in April because they could no longer hold her position open. She receives workers' compensation and has an attorney helping her with that process. "I'm not a fragile person," said the assistant manager. "Obviously, I went through 12 bank robberies, but this was the first where she was physically injured. In the other holdups, the robbers quietly made demands and were given the money. After treatment at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center's emergency room for the cut to the head, she was sent home but awoke the next day with extreme pain in my head. She immediately went to Carl's emergency room and has been treated ever since by an occupational health doctor, physical therapist, a psychiatrist, and a psychologist. Her daily life consists of headaches, sensitivity to noise and light, nausea, persistent ringing in her left ear, pain in her shoulders, neck, and lower back, an imbalance on her left side. Besides her inability to return to work, driving is difficult and she can no longer go to school or work out the several days a week that she used to. She attributes that to both physical pain and her fear of leaving her home. Her mother often has to care for her sons. She can't sleep more than a few hours a night. I have persistent nightmares. I wake up screaming and crying for help, she said. I have tried various medications, but none of them had an effect. The medications make me not remember the dreams as intensely. She continues to receive counseling and physical therapy. Everything is hard to do. It's hard to be a single mom of two boys running around the house screaming, she said, adding she is subject to mood swings. I find myself yelling at the kids just for being loud. Teacher of the Week, Stacy Carolyn, Muhammad Seymour High School English teacher and yearbook advisor. I get to open their eyes to the world around them. In her ninth year at Muhammad Seymour High School, English teacher Stacy Carolyn has a particularly complicated task during remote learning, facilitating the yearbook. An MS graduate herself, she has found creative ways to keep her students engaged as both English teacher and yearbook advisor. Not only has Mrs. Carolyn maintained her rock star status in the classroom, she has spent countless hours with her students' staff preserving the memories that make up a yearbook, Principal Chad Benedict said. Whether it be staying late, coming in early, or working Saturdays, she has worked hard through the pandemic to capture the moments that will last a lifetime for our students. I find my work important because I have the unique opportunity to shape the lives of kids on a daily basis. I get to open their eyes to the world around them through literature and writing. I get to be a part of their story and help them become the best young adults they can be. I became a teacher because I had the best teachers growing up who inspired me to want to teach as well. I loved school and I loved my teachers. Their impact on me and my life was profound. My favorite, most unique lesson that I teach is the Socratic seminars we have in my English 2 honors class. The seminars are entirely student-directed, and the students never cease to amaze me with their insight. I simply function as a facilitator and jump in if needed. It is my favorite because the ideas and discussions the students have are amazing. They are thoughtful and inquisitive in their questioning, and they respectfully discuss and challenge one another's ideas. I always learn so much from their discussions. My most fulfilling moment on the job was I treasure the daily light bulb moments in my classroom, but my most fulfilling moments usually come long after the student has left my classroom. I love to see what success they find in life, what path they choose to follow, and where life takes them. It is so amazing to feel as though I might have been a small part of their life success. Something else I'm passionate about is traveling. I love to see new places and experience new things in my travels. I engage students during this strange time by working extra hard to build relationships with kiddos that encourage them to continue engaging with school. I also try to change up lesson styles to avoid monotony. I also love to have a good laugh and encourage students to do the same. If I weren't a teacher, I would love to be a travel blogger photographer, explore the world and write about it to encourage others to do the same. CEO, REO frontman Cronin booked for UI's virtual homecoming. Illinois' first virtual homecoming game will have a halftime act after all. Taking place at the Marching Illini, Kevin Cronin, lead singer of Champaign-based REO Speedwagon. Cronin has been booked for a virtual 15-minute concert at halftime of the rescheduled homecoming game set for December 5th against Iowa, U of I Alumni Association President CEO Jennifer Dillavue told the News Gazette. It's part of a week-long homecoming schedule of activities that also includes salutes to the U of I's COVID-19 Shield team, interviews with alumni award winners, an international student talent show, and more. Bird's Eye View, Oakwood. Thanks in no small part to truck stops, we're holding our own. Like small-town mayors across the country, Oakwood's Clayton Woodard was concerned about important services like the volunteer EMT and ambulance services when restrictions were put in place during the spring due to COVID-19. Sales tax revenues, which the town relies on completely without a property tax levy, would dip significantly, he thought. The worst-case scenario, though, hasn't come to pass. We're holding our own, Woodard said. We have seen a slight reduction in our revenue, but that was anticipated. We were seeing what was going on the world stage, and we all got together and said, we need to slow down on some spending and see what happens here. We did, and it worked for us. We're down roughly 10% in revenue, but that's not bad in my mind, given what we as a society have been experiencing. Oakwood's revenue hasn't taken a major hit because the majority of it, Woodard said, comes from sales tax on fuel at its truck stops. And from its vantage point, the trucking industry isn't hurting. Love's and Pilot and Speedway and Phillips 66, whose lots are full, Woodard said. It just seems that the trucking industry, by what we see, has exploded, and that trickles down. Of course, Oakwood has had to make sacrifices, including its sesquicentennial celebration and its 4th of July fireworks this summer. But Woodard said the city has gone ahead with its larger projects, including major sidewalk repairs, storm drainage improvements, and building a new village hall. And the ambulance service he was worried about, it turns out, isn't being used as much as it was before the pandemic. I think it's going to be a struggle for some of these small-town ambulance services to remain viable after the pandemic. But we're doing okay, Woodard said. We've got reserves. Things are starting to come back. We're slowly getting there. Surge in coronavirus cases prompts grade school to switch to remote learning. The Oakwood School District is transitioning some students to full remote learning through November 29th. Currently, there are 14 staff members at Oakwood Grade School who have tested positive or are in quarantine, Superintendent Larry Maynard said. This includes both school principals and the nurse, which has impacted operations in the grade school office. This also brings us to approximately 45% of our teachers and staff out at the grade school and no administrators or nurse on campus to supervise the safety and well-being of our students and staff. Therefore, we are going to need to hit pause and transition Oakwood Grade School to full remote learning through November 29th, Maynard said. At Oakwood Junior High, three staffers, including the principal, have either tested positive or are in quarantine, necessitating a switch to full remote. The high school, which hasn't been hit as hard, will continue with a hybrid learning model, Maynard said. Multiple charges against man with gun at hotel. No one was injured in an early morning incident Monday at Urbana Hotel where an intoxicated man with a gun was making what a police officer described as crazy statements about active shooters. Urbana Police Lieutenant Dave Smisser said police were sent to the Eastland Suites at 1907 North Cunningham Avenue at 2:30 a.m. after receiving several calls, including one from arrestee Elijah Bond, 22, with conflicting reports about an armed man in the lobby and a possible shooting. One of the first officers to arrive encountered Bond, who is from Thompsonville in southern Illinois, outside his truck in the parking lot. The officer asked him what was going on, and Bond allegedly reached in his right coat pocket. The officer saw a Smith & Wesson .45 caliber handgun, which police immediately seized as they tried to determine what had happened. Smisser said police learned from a colleague of Bond's that the two of them are employed as security guards and had been in Urbana receiving training at a local gun facility. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 19th, 2020. Please stay tuned for Part 2.